Okay. Hi, everyone. Welcome to our fourth podcast. And our guest today is John McDonald. And John and his wife, Fiona McDonald, started Father Heart Scotland in 2010 as part of Father Heart Ministries. And they believe that in the same way that Jesus walked in sonship, that every man, woman, and child should be able to walk with their Heavenly Father as Papa and live the life for which they were created. Father Heart Scotland was born out of a desire to share the revelation of God as our true Father with the people of Scotland and beyond. Our heart, their heart, is to see people experience and take to their own hearts the truth of God's fathering love and embrace. And John has been a pastor and leader for more than 30 years. And welcome, John. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Anna. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. We are talking today about misogyny and how it affects us, how it affects the church, the culture. And I just felt like I wanted to say at the beginning that this can be a heavy topic because it is really major when you begin to delve into it. So I want to start by saying that misogyny was never God's idea. It never came from the heart of God. It is not his plan for us. And so that is the good news. But misogyny, a definition is it's the hatred, aversion to or prejudice against women. And that includes speech or behavior that promotes misogyny. And I know that you talk in your book, Made in His Image, about misogyny and how it affected your life. And so I was just wondering if you would tell us, how do you think it developed in your own life?
I guess it was really just everywhere. It was part of the culture I grew up in. Working class boy, growing up in Glasgow in Scotland. Didn't have a dad. And I took my cue from the older boys in the housing projects where I lived. I copied the rock stars and the football players, the soccer players, sorry, the real sports. So I just emulated these folks. Those were the only role models I had. Mm-hmm. And I guess one of the most damaging things, and it still damages people today, is that around the age of 10 years old, I discovered pornography. Mm-hmm. And it just confirmed this whole idea that was being thrown at me by society that girls, women, were there to serve me mm-hmm. because they were lesser than me.
Right.
It's horrible when I look back, but I unwittingly embraced that because it was, well, that's what everyone else thought.
Yeah. That's the culture. I saw a quote recently from, there's a book called Veiled and Silenced. It's also about misogyny. And they say the culture, it's like a fish in water. We don't, you know, it's all around us, but we don't see how culture affects us until we begin to really examine it. But culture totally does affect us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I look back and even now, the things that I see in media and television, I mean, it was in all of the television programs. You know, there was a popular comedy show in the UK called Till Death Do Us Part. Mm. And the way the man in that treated his wife and his daughter was appalling.
Right.
But that was acceptable comedy in those days.
Right.
And so it engenders this attitude, especially I think when you're young and very impressionable. Mm-hmm. You just soak it all up.
Right.
Because there's no one telling you different. Now, I was brought up by a single mother, but no one was explaining to me that what I was embracing, what I was watching television or shows or movies was misogyny.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember, do you have a first memory of being told or realizing that, to think about women in a negative way?
No, I don't. It was just part of life.
So prevalent.
The way things were.
Yeah.
I can't recall any specific words or conversations. It was just the whole culture. And it's so subtle. The message is given to you, but somehow society, school, home, it all communicates to you that women are less, they're less smart, they're less competent, they're less serious. And it's a huge lie.
And did you grow up in church?
No, my parents weren't religious. They sent me to Catholic church because that was part of the agreement of being married in the Catholic church. But I guess for a short time, I took it seriously until my dad died. When my dad died, I just kind of thought, well, where's God in this? You know? Although I'm saying I didn't have a dad, he was disabled and unable to communicate with me and do anything with me. So effectively, my mum was a single parent.
Right.
Then my dad died when I was 11 years old.
Wow.
And so I just told God where to stick it.
Well, and it's interesting that for you learned misogyny through culture. But misogyny is also very much alive and well in the church, even today. And in some ways, sometimes I look at it and I think there are more restrictions on women within the church than outside of the church. But I think it's also just the form of the misogyny, you know, because outside the church, there's the pornography and sex trafficking. And
I think it's more apparent in church. In certain sectors of the church, where women can't preach, they can't serve, they can't teach men, they can't do anything except make the tea, the coffee, teach a women's Bible study.
Right.
But the same attitudes are still prevalent in society. Just because we see women becoming, here in the UK, prime minister or becoming CEOs or whatever, they still face that animosity and prejudice in the boardroom and the home, you know, in so many places.
Right.
And for men, we don't even know sometimes that we're being misogynistic.
It's just the way it is.
That's the cruelty of it. It's not, I mean, some men are deliberately cruel. There's no getting away from that. But I think the majority of men don't know that they're being cruel. They really think, especially in church, they think this is God's will, this is the way God wants it, and my wife is rebellious or my wife is unsubmissive. And it creates so much damage.
Right. It really does. And what happened in your life that opened your eyes to misogyny?
Well, it all started with a lady called Denise Jordan, who she spoke about the war against femininity.
Yes.
I had been connecting with Father Heart Ministries, that the ministry that Denise leads with her husband, James. And just over time, walking and receiving the love of the Father in my heart just began to soften. And I began to perceive the reality of what Denise was saying, that there really is a war on femininity. It caused me to start to look at, well, where does that operate in my life? It's not just societal based. There's something in the spiritual realm.
Yes.
Something malignant. But definitely focuses an attack on femininity. Women, obviously, as the major carriers of femininity, are the focus of that attack. And so I just began to examine a lot of what I held. Where did this come from? And I say in the book that it all started when Adam called his wife Eve. Prior to that, she didn't have that name. And so it's almost like he illegitimately tried to take control and domination that God never charged them with.
Can you talk about the spiritual roots of misogyny a bit?
Yeah, I think when we read in Genesis that the Lord is saying to the serpent, obviously not a talking snake, but... But he said that the woman would be his enemy. I think we've read it as Satan would be her enemy. Actually, the Lord is, it's a warning to Satan. He says to him, you will crawl on your belly and eat dust the rest of your life, all of your days, sorry. Mm-hmm. And eating dust, as we know, it's, we think of a snake crawling, but that's not the picture that God is painting. The picture is of someone tasting defeat. You know, mm-hmm. if you're in a race and you're showing someone a clean pair of heels, they're eating your dust in your wake.
Mm. Yeah.
The Lord is using this as a picture of Satan being overcome, and it's by femininity, not by masculine power. You know, we do not wage war as this world wages war. The weapons we have are divine weapons. Mm-hmm. And I think we see those weapons most obvious in femininity, gentleness, kindness, love, tenderness, sensitivity.
Mm.
Galatians 5, you know, the fruit of the Spirit.
Right.
They're very much feminine characteristics. Doesn't mean men can't carry them. You know, but the focus of this attack by Satan was on women. And I think the first blow he struck was inciting Adam to rename his wife. The way he named the animals. And it created an attitude in mankind where in some instances women are seen as less than animals.
Right.
Some men treat their dogs better than they treat the women in their lives. And I see the roots of it there in Genesis 3.
Right, right. So how do you see just ways or examples that misogyny is affecting the church, even today?
Well, obviously, the exclusion of women from positions of ministry in some areas.
Mm-hmm.
We've been influenced. Our theology, our doctrine has not just been influenced by misogyny itself in some sort of bubble, but it's been developed through church leaders, church fathers. You know, the ancient church fathers said some abominable things about women.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I list some of it in the book, but things like a woman and a man are the image of God. The man on his own is the image of God, but the woman isn't. The woman mm-hmm. can't be the image of God without a man.
All right.
And so we've adopted all of this. It's in our roots. It's in our foundations.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think the interesting thing I find is when it's challenged, the anger that comes out. You right. know, like the anger of the Pharisees when Jesus challenged them. Because it's taken root in our hearts, not just in our institutions.
Mm-hmm.
Not just in our theology, not just in our doctrine or our practices, but in our hearts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in our attitudes.
I remember reading the story of Joan of Arc and the major accusation the church leveled against her that caused her to be burned at the stake was that she wore men's clothing in battle.
Hmm.
And she wore men's wow. clothing. She tells the story. She wore men's clothing even in prison because it was more difficult for them to rape her.
Mm.
When she was wearing men's clothing than it was if she wore women's clothing.
Yeah.
So it was a deliberate, you know, even back then in the 11th century, whatever it was, Joan was, she was fighting unwanted attention from men, misogynistic right. behavior.
Right.
It's crazy. You know, women who had to pretend to be men in order to fulfill the calling God put in their lives. You know, there was a lady who became a monk. Hmm. She spent her whole life disguised as a man.
Wow.
At one point, he was accused of fathering a child with this girl, which obviously is impossible because secretly he mm-hmm. was really she.
Hmm.
And she never broke her secret. She took the baby and brought it up as her own.
Wow.
But God called her into something of ministry and she had to pretend to be a man to carry it out.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
It is. Can you talk a little about, you know, there's a word people are using now that is deconstructing their faith, some of the things that they've been taught, and misogyny is certainly one of those things that they, you know, that people are trying to get rid of, and that's a wonderful thing. So what are some things that Christian men can now do to, you know, change their ways and change their thinking?
Hear women's voices.
Mm.
Listen to what women are saying.
Yeah.
Listen to their stories. You know, in writing my book, I read a lot of feminist literature. And what struck me in it, and I found very difficult as a man, was some of the anger. But I think the anger is the genuine voice of women who have been abused in culture. Mm-hmm. I don't just mean sexually or emotionally by partners, but actually the culture has abused women, and forced them into being something they're not and were not created to be. And so I think that's got to be the first thing. Listen to the voice of women.
Mm-hmm. That's really good.
How can you understand misogyny? How can you understand the bigotry and what it feels like to be discriminated against unless you listen to those who have been discriminated against? How can you understand oppression unless you listen to the oppressed?
Right.
But I remember, it's a different subject, but Martin Luther King spoke at, was it Stanford or University, I think, in the 60s, and he said that riot, you know, it was after the Watts Heights riots in LA, and he said, riot is the voice of the unheard.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, people go on about feminism. Sorry, I'm getting off track here, but...
No, go for it.
People go on about feminism being a danger, but it's not. It's a response to abuse. Mm-hmm. Right. Feminism is the voice of the unheard women.
Right. And there seems to be a fear sometimes within men that if a woman is successful and really rises up into what she's called to do, that they will somehow be pushed down or something, you know, they'll be considered less than. So I think that some men feel threatened.
It's called insecurity.
Yeah. Yes.
And that really is at the root of toxic masculinity.
Right.
Male insecurity. Mm-hmm. Because they don't know how to be men.
Right.
So they discover things like sensitivity, tenderness, gentleness in themselves. And it's not what they see modeled in the movies. It's not what they see modeled by public figures.
Mm-hmm.
And so they think, there's something wrong with me. I'm not a real man.
Exactly. And really, there is both masculine and feminine, because God is both masculine and feminine. And we all carry some masculine and feminine within us. And it's okay. And yeah, I love how Denise Jordan teaches it in The War Against the Feminine. It's like when a man feels some of those feminine thoughts, they often squash them down, thinking that there's something wrong with them.
I spent my whole life fighting against them, Anna.
Yeah.
Well, you know, almost 50 years mm-hmm. of fighting those, possibly a bit more. But I think misogyny existed before the church did. But mm-hmm. I think the church has to shoulder a great deal of blame for how they've propagated it. And the picture we give of people is leadership is very male-dominated. I think
yes.
for men, after you listen to women, be honest with your own hearts. Search your own hearts. If you feel that what women are saying is antagonistic, if you feel it uncomfortable, then it's because it's the thing they're attacking is in your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I would say we men need to begin to learn how to let go of power. And I don't like all of this patronizingly, we'll hand power over to women. That's patronizing, condescending nonsense. Mm-hmm. We need to let go of it and let women take hold of it for themselves. You know, they shouldn't need to battle for what should be theirs, what they should be facing. You know, dominion was a shared command, a gift from God. You know, he said to them, rule over.
Right.
No, he didn't say to him, he said to them.
Right.
And I think we need to be honest. We men need to be honest about our own failings and recognize that every other man has the same feelings and we're all covering them up.
Mm-hmm. And there's so much we could talk about this. I have so many thoughts going through my mind right now, but could you talk just a little bit about toxic masculinity versus true masculinity. And then I also just feel like God has a place for all of us. Like, he has a place for me. He has a place and purpose for you. My purpose doesn't diminish your purpose, you know, or anyone else's, you know.
Sure. Just to add on to the last topic about what men can do is recognize that we learn from each other. Mm-hmm. Men don't just learn from other men. Men learn from women.
Mm, yeah.
And there's a lot that we can learn from women that masculinity doesn't teach us, mm-hmm. especially the toxic masculinity that we've been raised up in. And I think the whole thing of toxic masculinity is there's an aggression to it.
There's a what? I'm sorry.
Sorry, an aggression to it.
Oh, an aggression to it. Yeah. Okay.
That the way to solve problems is aggressively, mm-hmm. either by confrontation, by violence even.
Mm-hmm. You
know, look at all the wars that have started because men thought that was the way to solve the issues between countries.
Right.
Or between mm-hmm. individuals. You know, and it's still a very dangerous thing. So when it comes to women who won't do as they're told,
mm-hmm.
The answer is violence,
mm-hmm.
to subdue her.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So you have things like, we talk about rape outside, but you have things like marital rape.
Yes.
Where a wife is just not wanting to, and a husband is forcing himself on her, or he's forcing her to do things that she's very uncomfortable with,
mm-hmm.
you know, from anal sex to whatever, you know. There's all of that stuff going on. Those are all manifestations of toxic masculinity.
Right.
Mansplaining.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's been used as a kind of comic term now, but actually it's very demeaning of women because it's assuming they don't know what you mean when you say something. I have a friend in Virginia who is from the hills of Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And she has that very hill accent and everything. And she's blonde and people look at her and shake their head, but she's a professor at a university.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, appearances are not everything.
Right.
She's a fantastic woman, an incredibly intelligent and clever and funny woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
But so we make judgments that because we believe that women are less, so therefore they wouldn't understand what I'm talking about, so I'll have to explain it to her.
Right.
And again, it's very patronizing and condescending.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this whole, something I learned about when I was researching for the book, this manspreading.
Manspreading? Mansplaining?
Manspreading and uh-huh. mansplaining. But, you know, men, I had never thought about it before, but the politics of it, where a man is sitting facing a woman and he just sits there with his legs wide open.
Mm.
You know, it's,
I see what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry,
just it's that called, body language.
It's called manspreading.
Okay. Yeah.
Apparently. That's yes. a new term for me too. But it's a form of intimidation. And,
yes.
You know, so it comes in so many ways. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you see someone talked about it in the movies where, you know, the girl's not in a romantic movie, the girl's not interested in the guy, but he hassles her and hassles her and hassles her until she gives in and discovers, oh, I actually love him.
Mm-hmm.
Which sounds very romantic, but actually it's
mm-hmm. it's actually pretty creepy.
It's stalking.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's really yes. stalking.
Because if she said no, that meant no.
Exactly. Right. Uh-huh. Toxic masculinity doesn't
recognize. We've been taught as a culture many, many wrong things.
Well, yeah. You know, there's a politician, and I'm ashamed to say that he's a believer. He was talking because, you know, the Scottish referendum, we said no to independence.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, you know, just because a woman says no the first time doesn't mean she means no.
Mm. Gosh.
Can you not see how misogynistic and toxic that is?
Yeah. Wow.
Mm. But that is an underlying attitude.
Right.
No.
Right.
It is. And it's so destructive.
Mm-hmm.
It's destructive of intimacy. if you're living with that toxic kind of masculinity, you'll never have intimacy with your partner.
Right, right. Because you don't feel safe with
exactly
that.
The partner never feels safe.
Mm-hmm.
They're walking on eggshells. My poor wife put up with some of that for a number of years before I came to my senses. And, you know, it's not pleasant.
Right.
And actually, when I realized it, I was devastated.
Hmm.
I was absolutely devastated to realize what I'd done to my wife.
Wow. How did you, did you talk to her about it and have restoration and that kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean, I cried my eyes out.
Oh, wow. And
she started telling me the things that, and my behavior that caused her pain and wounded her. It just made me weep. I was appalled at myself. I hated myself for such a time.
Mm.
To realize what I'd done to such a special woman.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Well, that's amazing that, you know, that you did see that and that you did see how misogyny has affected so many things. We hear some women talking about and teaching about misogyny, but not so many men. And I think that's great that you're seeing it, because the thing is, it's not just a women's issue, is it? It's both men and women need to recognize it. What is it? How has it affected us? And see how do we get rid of it? How do we change our mindsets? How do we change our cultures?
Well, it's turned men into bullies.
Bullies, yes. Yeah.
They become a bully.
For sure. Yeah.
If I don't get my own way, I'm going to create something,
mm-hmm.
some sort of situation where I will get what I want.
Right.
And I don't care what it does to you, whether it's sex or a new television or a new car or whatever, you know. I just can't believe the amount of pain that's been caused in the world because of this issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think people don't realize it.
You know, women on the streets, working in the streets, they're there because 96% of them have been abused by men.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no other way to make a living.
Right.
So this is what misogyny has done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, prostitution is not a prostitute's problem. It's a men's problem.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And then there's sex trafficking, where people have no choice in the matter.
Yeah.
And
this is a thing. I mean, I'm trying to think what the big... I follow a lot of campaigners on Twitter, female campaigners and trafficking campaigners and stuff. And, you know, there's been a big campaign because there's a porn site called Pornhub.
Right, yes.
And the porn they've been showing has been rape scenes and everything else.
Oh, God.
There are girls beginning to come out and say, that was me, and I was not, when that happened to me, I was really raped, and they filmed it. So there's been a huge campaign to try and get them shut down.
Yes.
Because there are boys watching this.
Yeah.
And thinking that's normal.
Mm.
There was a survey recently in which I think something like 78% of girls said they'd experienced their boyfriend strangling them during sex without consenting to strangle. Because they've seen it in pornography and thought that was normal. That's what the girlfriend wanted.
Right.
You know, it's scary, scary.
It is. So how do you see us coming out of that? What do you think is the answer?
I can only speak from my own experience. And my own experience was meeting God as a father.
Mm-hmm.
Because meeting him as a father, for a boy who'd never known a father's love,
mm-hmm.
father's experience, it was a huge adjustment for me internally.
Right.
And I think that's where the adjustment always needs to take place. It needs to be an internal adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
Heart change.
Yes.
I think it can only be a complete heart revolution. You know, because issues of bigotry, prejudice, hatred, violence, they're issues of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I've come to the conclusion that only the love of God can change hearts.
Yes, I agree.
I really do.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we need to have more teaching, of course, because there needs to be awareness of the issues. And you're right, yes, there needs to be men teaching, but I think women's voices still need to be heard.
Yes.
I think I believe it's incumbent upon the church to tackle the issue head on, stop ducking it.
Mm-hmm. You know,
start to teach from pulpits
on yes.
the egalitarian values of the mm-hmm. equality of men and women, not just ontologically, but in reality.
Yes.
You know, yes. It's not that we were created the same, but we have different roles. No, we don't. We have the same roles to rule and shepherd and steward this world.
Yeah.
And partnership, equal partnership.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I see a lot of church websites that they may say that they believe in equality, but then you look at the leadership and it's all male. And so it's like, you really need to practice what you preach. You know, if you're going to say that you're egalitarian, then where are your leaders? You know, look at the leaders.
I mean, of course it's helpful to change systems. But I think it's more important to change hearts, because it's not good just
yes.
for appearance's sake, like you're saying, put a woman in a position like, let's make that girl the youth pastor or the children's pastor or something, because that doesn't deal with the bigotry and prejudice they face from male
right.
parents. You know, my wife is a school principal, head teacher here in the UK,
mm-hmm.
and men think they can speak certain ways to her.
Yes.
Yeah. And they don't realize that she knows how to answer back.
Yes, but I was just talking to a friend yesterday who mentioned that she has a friend that's a CFO, a certified chief financial officer in a company, but that still has to deal with what they call the boys club, you know, of not being invited into conversations, not being really seen and recognized. You know, it's hard. It's hard to press through that.
Yeah. And my wife's cousin is quite high level executive. You know, she's worked with the business institutes here in the UK and the law courts and all of these kind of things. And she's usually called in as a troubleshooter
mm-hmm.
to reorganize, to cut deadwood and all that. But the old boys club can't handle her because she's a very strong woman who is very good in business mm-hmm. and very good at what she does. And they just can't handle it. So I don't know how many places she's had big payoffs because she was going to sue them for the way they've handled her, you know. Yeah, you're right. I think the boys club is, and that's why a lot of men don't speak out about the misogyny and the toxic masculinity, I think,
mm-hmm.
Because they're afraid of what the boys club will do to them.
Yeah, right. And even in the younger generations that perhaps it's, you know, there is more respect for women in certain roles, but there's still, I think the misogyny is still there. It's just maybe looks a little bit different.
I don't know about the US, but here in the UK, the surveys show that more and more teenage boys especially believe it's okay to hit a woman.
Hmm. Wow. That's,
because again, they're seeing it in pornography. They're
right.
They're getting girls to send them naked pictures and passing it around the school.
Mm.
You know, I think the access to pornography is so much easier than when I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
When I found it, it was because people were throwing pornographic magazines over the fence of our school playing fields.
Right.
Sports fields. Now,
yeah,
boys,
it's everywhere,
and
right.
girls get mm-hmm. it on their phones,
right?
You know, right. And so the prevalence of it is creating a generation that I think is heading for destruction in terms of interpersonal relationships.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. Well, it is a, like I said, a very serious topic, and needs much more awareness. And I recently did a research paper on domestic violence and interviewed a center here in Central Texas. And one of their main things is education, because they say the culture needs to stop allowing domestic violence. And, you know, that's one way of helping people realize what is it, what does it look like, not to mention verbal abuse and, you know, all those other, you know, financial abuse, mental abuse.
My next podcast is about interviewing someone, a girl called Natalie Collins. That's
her. Oh, job. Yeah, I've heard of her. I have her book.
You heard of Natalie? Mm-hmm. That's what she's doing.
Yes.
So, but yeah, I think you're right. And I think the church needs to be at the forefront of the education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can't keep this up and still talk about the love of God.
Right.
They're incompatible.
Right, exactly. I was just going to ask you what, you know, if there had never been a fall and Adam were still in the garden, male and female, what do you think that their relationship would be like?
Harmonious.
Yes.
Yeah, I think there would have been an absence of discord.
Mm-hmm.
They lived in a paradise. Without the fall, God called them very good.
Mm-hmm.
Mutual respect. I think preference of each other's mm-hmm. needs. It's something I've been learning, to sometimes just put what I want aside because I know how much something would mean to my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And let her take the lead in that too.
Right.
Yeah, I think their cycle of life and their duties were shared equally.
Mm-hmm. And freedom to make their own decisions and create and, yeah, not be controlled by someone else.
Obviously, my wife and I discuss major decisions. But things like she wants to buy a pair of shoes or a dress or something, she doesn't need to ask me.
Mm-hmm.
That's her decision. She goes and does it.
Right.
And I appreciate how well she looks in them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, like I said earlier, ruling, reigning, taming the earth, subduing the earth, I think they both shared equal roles in that. I think
yes.
The woman had the equal authority and power mm-hmm. to say to the lion, sit down. You know, just as much as her husband did. But I can't begin to imagine what kind of paradise that would have been like, because
mm-hmm.
just everything around them was beautiful. Their interactions were beautiful together too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The mutuality involved would have been at a level that I just can't even conceive of.
Right. And I think that's God's, of course, perfect idea for us, and he wants to help us get back to, not that we will on the earth, I don't know, but that's the goal.
You know? Yeah, I think that's the goal of love. Mm-hmm. Love's goal is to take us towards that.
Yes.
Or back to that.
If yes. you like.
Mm-hmm. That idyll that he created mankind to live in.
Mm-hmm. what would you say to a woman who is in a church where they're misapplying certain scriptures, like 1 Corinthians 14:34, where a woman needs to be silent in church, and the various other problem scriptures?
I guess the short answer to that is find another church.
Yes, I agree.
Because, no, I think there are differences. There are men and women who ascribe to those doctrines, because that's all they've ever known.
Right.
And if they really are godly people, they will listen to different perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
And so you may be able to bring that different perspective and say, listen, read that veiled silence, read John's made in his image, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
and if they're good people, they will take that on board and say, okay, I'll read this and I'll have a look at it and I'll re-examine it. But I think there are also organizations and denominations who are very, very hardline. Who not only are so misogynistic, but they're also into this whole real man culture.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Which is just toxic.
Yeah, it should be called toxic man, right?
Yeah. You know, and in those instances, get out.
Right.
I know it's difficult because your husband might not agree with you if you're married, but he has a duty to love you, to care for you, to protect you, and shelter you from other people's abuse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm sorry to say it, but if he's not doing that, then there's something wrong in your marriage that needs addressing.
Right. And also, there's something about finding your tribe, you know, finding a group of people that are on the same page as you are, or at least they're going in that direction as far as the father heart and, you know, biblical equality and getting rid of misogyny and all of that. And so I think there's a lot of life that can be found in communities and,
And I think that's what people find in leaving church. Mm-hmm. You know, you spoke about deconstruction. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people who leave church are not actually people with little faith. Usually it's a lot of very committed believers.
Yes.
They just find that they cannot deal with this culture any longer.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so many people are looking for that, like you say, that community where, yeah, you might not agree on everything. Of course, you never will. If you do, then you need to find somewhere else because there's something wrong.
Right, because you need to be growing, right?
Yeah, my wife and I have been married 34 years. We still don't agree on lots of things. Uh-huh. And that's all right. But toxic masculinity says it's not all right. Mm-hmm. You can't disagree with me.
Exactly.
That's the other side. But I think people are looking for that community, Anna. I think you're right.
Right.
I was looking at lifestyle things and how you live a long life. Mm-hmm. And we always think about diet, no alcohol, no smoking. Those are best for your health. Actually, they're at the bottom of the list.
Hmm.
Top of the list is social interaction. And second is intimate friendships.
Wow.
Those are the top two out of 10 for well-being and long life.
Hmm. Wow. That's amazing.
No alcohol, no smoking, and dieting are the bottom three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We do need each other. We were created to have community. And, you know, even if it's over technology, we're still created to have that community and interaction. And
I think that's what's so damaging about the pandemic, apart from the fact that people are enclosed in small spaces with their abusers. The mental health of people who cannot find a way to connect with others.
Right. Yeah. It's been really hard. Yeah.
Especially for community.
Yeah. Well, I want to take a minute and highly recommend your book. I was looking through it again and you have so much information. Like you must have really done a lot of research for, you know,
it was kind of scriptures.
Do what?
It was about 10 years in the making.
Wow.
But most of that time was God working in my heart.
Yeah. It's really good. So I highly recommend it. Made in His Image by John MacDonald. And so I think we'll close now, but I would love for you to just pray over everyone, if you don't, all the listeners, if you wouldn't mind.
Thank you. Father, I understand that this is an enormous subject that we talked about today. And that some of what we know is only scratching the surface of the way it offends your grace and your love. So Father, my prayer is that we would learn what it is to grow in your love. That you would teach us, Father, how to receive more love. Not more knowledge, not more information, but more love. That we would learn to listen with our hearts. Father, I pray for those who are struggling in this area. I pray for people who have been victims or are oppressed in this area, Papa, you would shine a light into the darkness for them.
Yes, thank you.
That you would show them your own heart. That you'd begin to lead them in a path that liberates. Father, that those around them would also have their hearts enlightened, as Paul prayed for the Ephesian church. That they might see the damage that they're doing with toxicity and wrong teaching. Father, I pray for churches and leaders to hear the cry of the oppressed. Thank you, Father, for your love. I don't understand it, Father. I don't understand how you can love the oppressed and still love the oppressor, but you do. And Father, for those of us who oppose oppression and fight it, I pray you'd give us grace to understand the oppressor as well as the oppressed. To understand the prison that they're in. As we seek to release those they themselves have imprisoned. Father, I pray your presence, your love, and your grace go with us wherever else we're doing the rest of this day, the rest of this week, the rest of this month and year. That we would know your presence surrounding us, your arms encircling us. Amen.
Yes. Amen. Amen. Thank you. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I got a lot of this conversation myself. And I just want to give your website again, fatherheartscotland.com. And of course, you can find Anna Harris Ministries at annaharrisministries.com. But thank you so much. I really, really appreciate you coming on here and chatting with us today.